Welcome to the Whole and Healthy Vibe podcast, a show to help you shift away from the diet and dogma towards a whole and healthy life.
We're your hosts, Laura and Kezia, health coaches, cake lovers, and body positive warriors. Let's get the show started.
Hi everyone, it's Laura with you this week on the podcast. And in this episode, I'm interviewing Rosie Slozek, who is a money genius, basically. She really knows her stuff when it comes to money. She supports women around kind of having a better relationship with money. And in this episode, we are chatting about finance, our self-care, and kind of self-care is around finances as well. So it's a really, really interesting topic. I hope you get a lot out of this. It's really interesting for me because I've always thought there's quite a big link between food and money. But anyway, I will let you listen to the interview. Hi, Rosie. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Laura.
It's lovely to have you here on the podcast. We were just saying before we started recording that we've known each other online for quite a while now, but I've never, until today, actually spoken, as is the kind of weird world of online business, I think.
Well, it's one of the nice things, isn't it? You can actually, it's almost like pen friends. You can like really, really know somebody, yeah, or feel you know them, and actually you haven't even spoken or met up. But that's one of the nice things. It just opens the doors to meet so many more fabulous people than you would otherwise get to know.
It absolutely, and to be honest, most of the most fabulous people who I know I've met online.
Or it's always the way, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. In fact, Kezia, who I record the podcast with, we knew each other on Skype and we hadn't met. I think it was about 2 years before we actually met in person. It was really unusual.
I'd say 2 years is quite not very long, really.
I suppose some people have been going for like years and years, haven't they? But yes, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do?
Yes, I'm Rosie Slozek at The Money Haven. You may also know me, I had called One Man Band Accounting before, but say we all evolve. So I've upbranded, changed the name and changed what I do a bit. And the reason I'm here is that one thing I sort of go and bang my drum all about is actually self-care for your finances. Quite often I see specifically business finances because most of my clients have businesses. But it's one of the things I really, really like about Wholeheartedly Healthy, Laura, and even before you you changed your brand as well, was just the fact that it's just such a... you're just a normal person, just trying to eat the best way you can with a normal life.
Thank
without making a big thing about it. And it just goes really, really well with what I do, which is almost like the money equivalent of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like today I'm really, really busy. I still want to eat something fairly decent. So I've gone and chopped up some vegetables at lunchtime and we'll have them with some delicious vegetable bakes from Iceland, which I picked up last week. But it's that balance of, it's almost like mentoring women, mm-hmm, to just feel clear about their food for you and about their finances for me.
Yeah.
Just so we can flow as women and actually for grow. So in a nutshell, it's I mentor women to get clear about their finances so their business grows and their creativity flows. But it really is just about feeling really, really good about the finances in the same way as you're feeling really good about the food, because if both of those pieces aren't there in your life enough, you just feel shit. Sorry, yeah, if anyone doesn't mind swearing.
I think the clean lyrics label. I was looking at our podcast actually, and it's got a clean lyrics label. I'm like, oh, I think we're gonna have to take that off. But yeah, and I mean, I was really, really excited to get to talk to you because I've often thought that finances, first of all, I think there's a lot of interesting parallels between food and money and our relationship with food and money. I think there's a lot of interesting parallels there. But I've always thought that our finances are actually a massive part of our well-being, that generally it gets left out of the conversation around women's well-being, because if your finances are in a mess, more than likely you're in a bit of a mess as well. And so it's going to be really interesting to get your take on all of that. And I know you talk about finances as self-care, or self-care for your finances. How do you kind of, what are your, what's your approach to kind of seeing finances in that way?
Well, it's both, because, mm-hmm, the self-care is really, really, really important. There's nothing wrong with, unless you've got celiac disease, there's nothing wrong with basically having one of those days when you should have basically an entire loaf of white bread in your face. We've all had those. But the only real problem with that is when you give yourself a guilt trip for 3 weeks afterwards. Yeah. Or, for example, being on your period, eating the entire packet of chocolate biscuits, which clearly I have never done. And the real damage for that, unless you've got celiac disease, in which case it's gluten-free, is actually in the guilt and the beating yourself afterwards. And that's where the self-care comes in. And it's such a big piece. And it's the same way with the finances. The two go together. So with the food, well, for me, if I know that I'm going to eat the entire packet of biscuits, I have been known to make sure I drink an entire glass of water beforehand just to check it's not there. But it's that self-care around it. So make sure I'm not dehydrated. Not beat myself up about eating the biscuits, and probably choose a lower calorie packet of biscuits than a higher calorie packet of biscuits. But sometimes it just happens. So with the finances, sometimes there are heavier months, sometimes you don't have all the ducks in a row. A lot of what advice you see out there just isn't appropriate for our times, full stop. Whether you've got a job or a business, and if you've got a business, whether you've got a job and a business or just a business, so much stuff out there just isn't appropriate. It doesn't fit in our times. And you can just feel like a really bad person if all the ducks aren't in a row. And it's almost a bit like, you know, like you know if you're a bit overweight according to the scales, or some chart or somewhere, feeling just really, really bad. It's breaking away from all of that and actually feeling okay with whatever it is can feel like it's just a really major thing to do.
Absolutely.
And the two go together. So that's why it's just so important to me, because fundamentally it's not about money, finances or food. It's actually about feeling okay with who we are as ourselves and then going fixing the bits that need to be fixed as well. Because if you eat white bread every day, it's really not great, but it's okay sometimes.
Yeah.
Says she, who currently is eating quite a lot of it because I have stuff going on. But, you know, but you see, I know the line when it's too far, and it's knowing yourself. So I know the line when it's too far, and I know when to cut myself some slack.
Yeah, that's self-care in a nutshell, I think.
Pretty much, yeah.
So in terms of you were mentioning there a little bit about finances and how a lot of what we're told nowadays is outdated, and in what kind of ways do you feel that that's the case, and where should we be kind of looking for different information, things that are going to make us feel more empowered around our finances?
Well, a lot of it, they claim it's not, but it's a lot of, if you really start digging, it all boils down to one man, one job. And even if you're one woman, one job, even if you've got have a full-time job and you never want a business in your entire life, we're not in that world anymore. We probably haven't been in that world for 20 years. It's just that the world hasn't caught up. You can't rely on it. And to a certain extent, even if you've got the kind of skills where you can go from job to job, there's all sorts of things that can happen. I mean, I don't suppose anyone remembers that rather interesting NatWest computer failure, and people's houses couldn't go through and they didn't get paid for about 2 months.
I can vaguely remember that, actually. That
The whole thing went down, and clearly it wasn't good for NatWest. But really came up was the fact that so many people didn't have everything structured. They didn't have the savings. They had to be paid on that day to pay their bills. Now, it doesn't matter if you're paid £50,000 a year, £100,000 a year, or basically you're a Victorian pauper. That's hand to mouth. And that I was quite pleased in a sort of slightly horrible way when that happened, because it's a very clear example of having things being structured, but no one's talking about this. A lot of what's out there is like different streams of income, but you know, how do you structure, you know, not having to have the money coming in at the end of the month? Or there's just sorts of different things. I mean, things like paying if you have debt, paying debt off before before the money comes in. You just work as a sole trader. There's a lot of ways of balancing different things, and generally speaking, it's just not talked about. A lot of people who look like they've got everything sort of sort out, particularly not so much from like, I'm not talking about rich people here, but a lot of houses, the prices of houses now, you can't get a house on 2.5 times your salary like it was when our parents were that relevant age. You just can't. So things have to be done differently. But most of the general societal information out there is still based on a world we're not in.
Yeah.
And it's not even so much about very specific things. It's the feel. And I think the feel of it is we're broken, we're wrong, we can't do this, we can't handle it. And the whole feeling around both subjects, food and money, is fear and anxiety. And then beating ourselves up for doing it. And then, of course, we get this whole, you know, we can do this, we can do this. And mm-hmm. But the whole thing is just drama.
Yeah.
And that I find is actually, it's not actually about the information and how to do it. The first step is actually stepping out of the drama, because mm-hmm. it's just food and it's just numbers.
Yeah.
We need both.
Yeah. It's a really good way to look at it. And I know there's quite a few women listening who will totally relate to what you're saying, especially that the anxiety that they might get from the finances and feeling out of control, definitely feeling guilty. I think, you know, we all have this view of what might be an ideal financial situation that we should be in. And I think there's probably not very many of us who are in that situation and who feel very, very bad about it. What kind of advice would you have for women who are feeling perhaps a little bit overwhelmed and haven't got the ideal financial situation, perhaps have a lot of debt? Kind of what advice would you give those women for not being so fearful of it all and not being so beating themselves up quite so much?
I would say it's actually to take the personalisation out of it. And I will put my hand up here and just say this took me a very, very long time. It's still a work in progress. Mm-hmm. But it is just numbers. And wherever there's looking at the situation, mm-hmm. but often, you know, they don't know the situation, or you look at it and it's like, oh my God. But it's so hard until you start to be able to take the personal out of it, to actually realise that it's just a situation. Mm-hmm. That's it. In exactly the same way that if you do basically have a diet and fail, it's just a diet. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you failed as a person. I think that's the thing. It's because when I was actually, it's the reason I did it. It was because I created a self-care expert called Heather Bestel. I listened to her on a summit last year, and I knew she was the perfect person to put together a little online retreat about it. So it's this self-care for your biz finances retreat, but it just mm-hmm. it works for if you don't have a business as well. Mm-hmm. But the main point of it was just to have this really nice environment where it's just about the numbers. And actually the goal wasn't necessarily to fill in the spreadsheets. Yes, that word, horrible word, spreadsheet, with the numbers. Oh, I know. The goal of it isn't actually to fill it in. It's not what the numbers are. It was actually to watch the videos and gradually over time. And to be honest, probably I'm talking sort of 6 to 12 to probably to 18 months, several years for some people I know who started doing it. It's those tiny little baby steps to, it's just a number, but it's just knowing what they are. So I'm one of them, the more, should we call, hardcore one, the proper numbers one. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the profit in your business? So for your job, it'll be what's your gross salary?
Yeah.
What they're claiming they're paying you, then it's your profit after tax in your business. Mm-hmm. So for your job, it'll be how much you paid after tax. And then I'd add another column for your job is how much are you paid after all the deductions that are a choice. So for example, your pension and all of that. And it's not about what it is. Mm-hmm. It's about knowing what the numbers are. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to get to a point where you look at it and go, okay. Okay, well, if I did that and that and that, then we can work that out. And, oh, yes, that'll help. And next year, that'll be in that situation. And suddenly one day you look at it and you go, you realise that they're just numbers. That's the real goal.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm really, really after, because that's when change can really start. If you're basically sitting there, like a rabbit about to be mown down by a big, scary numbers car or whatever, nothing's really going to change. It's sort of like the equivalent of somebody who basically keeps doing crash dieting because they don't want anything really to change.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that a lot of women tend to have a lot of, and as we mentioned at the start, there's these parallels between food and money. They seem to have, you know, these behaviours, whether that's spending more than they earn. And I know that that creates a lot of, it's kind of like, I've always seen it as similar to overeating. So a lot of us, I mean, certainly in the past, my pattern has been that I spend just in the same way that I used to emotionally overeat. It was a coping mechanism. It was a way to numb out of feeling certain feelings, because when I was spending money, I would feel that elation with that lovely, pretty new thing that I would have, and then feel the guilt afterwards, just as you feel the same thing if you eat a slice of cake and then feel guilt afterwards. How do you, in terms of kind of women who might notice that pattern within themselves in terms of overspending, and I know there's a mindset thing there about not using something for the numbing out, but is there any advice that you would give women around just kind of starting to, I don't know, that regain some control over overspending is the right word, but, and I know women in business do this as well, as that shiny object syndrome.
Oh, yes, the buying the courses. I don't want to do the tax returns. Yeah, much money you spend.
So have you got any advice for those, for women who might relate to that?
I would basically suggest that technique I developed for basically overeating for the period, because I noticed that right beforehand, pretty much all my usual, because I am naturally fairly self-controlled with this, or maybe I've developed it, because there's one thing harder than not eating when you want to overeat is losing weight. And I'm really quite lazy, so I decided that not eating it at the time is easier than losing weight later. So I developed quite a lot of self-discipline, but this all went out of the window at a certain time of the month, and I'm sure everyone can relate. At certain times you just can't. So I knew that I was going to eat the biscuits and the chocolate, and this made me feel bad, and I didn't like this, because it was almost like you got control of me, and control freak me didn't like that. So I decided that, okay, instead of feeling bad about eating half a packet of biscuits, I was going to deliberately eat an entire packet of biscuits, feel slightly sick, which is usually a very good mechanism for not eating anymore. And I actually kept track of it just to sort of see, and I actually ended up eating fewer calories. Because I deliberately overdone it very slightly. And believe, by the way, those biscuits are very tasty as well. You know, I did pick a packet that I really liked. And I did, you know, so it wasn't the massively, incredibly calorific biscuits. I think it's a packet of Garibaldi's, if anyone's interested. I will eat the entire, get a very good cup of tea, and I will eat the entire three strips all in one go. But would you do the same thing, basically, to have a fund?
Yeah.
For such times.
Yeah.
Decide when you're in a good space how much it is. Add a little bit more, because we all know what we do in a good space. We all underestimate ourselves. Add a bit over the top to make sure that when you're in the space, and you might be able to get it right first time, but when you're in that space, you feel that there's enough money there to kind of like scratch the itch and then scratch it a little bit more and keep going.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not too much and not too little, so it doesn't trigger off you not feeling looked after.
Yeah.
And then just go and spend the money.
I think that's a massive thing, actually, that you just jumped on there, is the feeling looked after. And money's a massive part of that as well, isn't it? And being able to spend. And I know, again, from previously when I've tried to have budget myself too strictly, a bit like when you go on a diet and you don't, you don't really have enough to, you know, you're not giving yourself that pleasure, it tends to backfire. And I think it's really interesting how, you know, money is there to take care of us as well.
Oh, it's totally us. It's like I found a really nice place where I have a manicure now every couple of weeks, outside the growing season when it gets wrecked. But it's just really nice. It's almost like a little community in there. So everyone knows each other and we talk to each other. And it's, you know, £6 to have colour done. It's not very much money.
Yeah.
And, you know, so she got married and we've all seen the wedding pictures. And that's not very much money. Mm-hmm. And it's a self-care thing. And it, by the way, I have a self-care budget. It goes in my self-care budget. There's an app. If anyone's got an Android, there's an app called Spending Tracker, which is my favourite at the moment.
I'll just jot that down, because I'll put the link.
That's for Android. I've no idea for
Apple. What was it called? I'm sorry,
Spending Tracker.
All right, great.
It's got space for income as well, but it's very, very, very simple.
Yeah.
And
simple's good.
Yeah, I mean, that's all. Because when I first started doing it, I had a lot of overhang from things I'd been taught. You must have a budget. I fought against it for years, and last June I decided I was just going to play around. So my budget starts on Wednesday, because it's quite the, I have a certain amount of money, which is not very much. It's split between 5 days. It starts on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then I save half of it for this Monday and Tuesday. And it sounds really weird, but just the way my week works, mm-hmm. I try to save a little bit out of it. Most weeks, some of it will get saved.
Yeah.
Get put aside just to basically cultivate the habit. And the hardest part, I think, was actually the getting over the, oh my God, it's a budget, the whole sort of conditioned restrictive thing. That was actually the goal, was to work through the feelings of feeling really, really restricted, and just to work out, it's like, for example, I had to bump it up. Oh my goodness, that triggered a lot of stuff. I had failed, clearly. Just all of that stuff. And that was actually the goal, really, was to get all of that out of my system.
Because it's incredible.
I didn't even agree with it, but you know how it happens.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just, again, just the parallels with food are coming out again, because it's almost kind of a bit like teaching yourself not to diet and teaching yourself to be okay with not tracking every single calorie or and being more intuitive. It's that's kind of... it's similar to what it sounds like you were doing there, is about just being easy and open and not having that restriction.
And sometimes it's going to be harder. Like, for example, mm-hmm. when I lived in America, I had to accept I was going to be 2 stone heavier. That's just the way it was, for lots of reasons.
Yeah.
I didn't like it, but that was the way it was.
Yeah.
Here it's different. I have a set weight. I know when I go above it, no, excuse me, but I can't be eating that amount of chocolate. But again, when I'm going through time with fairly bumpy times, okay, I'm at the top of it, and I've been the top of my weight range for about 2 years now, and mm-hmm. there's been a lot happening.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of recognising it's just money. And actually, that's the really big difference, actually, between if you go and study the people who have really quite a lot, they're called high net worth, and the ones that mm-hmm. manage their money well, as opposed to having a lot of money and spending it, because a lot mm-hmm. of people do that. Then they're just aware of it. It's just a tool in the same way that food goes in and food goes out. And it's not that it's not important, but it's just something that you do. There's not so much emotional bond. Actually, bondage is the right word, actually.
Yeah,
I would say that is actually the biggest goal. And I say that's why I really like when you changed the name. So I can't even remember what it was before. But it's such a wonderful name, wholeheartedly healthy.
Yeah,
because it's not about having food as a fetish. Mm-hmm. It's just people going about their day-to-day life, making a decision in that moment to add an extra vegetable in on mm-hmm. a bad day. Mm-hmm. I'm at the moment trying to move my breakfast to a green smoothie and an orange away from white bread for 8 months. So I'm quite pleased with myself. But again, it's I'm feeling very pleased because I'm managing to do that sort of 2 days out of seven, mm-hmm. and I'm slightly puzzled because I'm not beating myself up about the fact that the other 5 days, and this is new for me.
Yeah,
and it is that learning curve. Mm-hmm. So actually, to a certain extent, actually, your title could apply to what I do as well.
Yeah, and that's I'm glad because it always makes my day when someone says that about the name, because that's exactly how I communicate. It's like, yes, that name was inspired. But that's exactly what I wanted to communicate with it, because I think it is that thing. It's not, and it's really interesting again what you said there about really high earners who manage the money well, not having that fetish about. And I mean, I think in the past, I definitely had that fetish thing about food. It was that obsession with food. And I think it is about taking a step back and just saying it is just numbers. It's not, and I know, you know, just as much as food, money can bring up a lot of, certainly lack of money can bring up a lot of heavy going emotions, a lot of fear. But I think when you take that out of it, it becomes numbers that, you know, that you can deal with.
Yes, but not in a calorie counting way. But having said that, it is actually about awareness, because one thing I've done for years and years and years is read the backs of packets. Mm-hmm. Because you can't necessarily assume that, for example, whatever you think it might be. I don't tend to buy cake in shops because mm-hmm. they tend to involve things that sort of like, no, you shouldn't be having that much sugar in there. And no, it's not so much about not eating it, but it's like, if I'm going to be having 500 calories in a slice of cake, I want a better quality cake than that.
Yeah.
I will go over. And if anyone, by the way, is an absolute massive chocolate nut, Paul A. Young chocolates.
These,
oh my, they are amazing. They
that down.
Is, I think they do mail order. They are only in London, but if anyone's making a trip down, they are definitely a destination. When my friend came over from Sweden, who buys a fan of yours because I introduced her, we do a little pilgrimage to there because they're only very, very small, but he does everything from the only Marmite chocolate that I've ever known in slightly work to a Pimm's chocolate, which I didn't like, but it's an incredible experience. My favourite one is going to my local Greasy Spoon cafe with a normal cup of Builder's tea with his passion fruit truffle. It is absolutely amazing. It's got these sort of really thick chocolate. It's like dark chocolate, but I'm going on a bit here. But it's not dark chocolate, but not too dark.
Everyone who listens to the podcast.
But it's just really, really nice, and it's not all very half-falutin sort of artisan-y chocolate, and it's a bit hardcore. It's just really, really, really nice. So, totally. Yeah. And I was in one of the branches, and was a man going in there, and he was buying this massive assortment for his girlfriend. I was like, can we swap places, please? But it's totally about real self-care indulgence, because these truffles are £2 each.
Yeah.
They are totally worth £2, and there's nothing to go in there. I have totally no problems. I'll go in there and I will buy one truffle. No problems with
I'm going to go and check that out, and I'm in London in a few days' time.
They've got several, but Wardour Street is usually the easiest for most people. That's in Soho and off.
Absolutely. And I can also remember as well, Lucy, because I can remember you used to, I'm sure you still do, but it was like, you know, when you do your finances, go out and have a brownie.
Oh, yeah, I still send brownies to my clients, even on the workshop. They'll all have brownies, all the group programs, everyone has brownies. And it's taking the edge off.
Yeah.
It's that whole, okay, I've signed up to do this thing, or quite often it's something to do with a tax return or a deadline. Mm-hmm. But the people who just need information, I get the occasional person, but most of the time there's a whole bunch of fear underneath. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just, I know HMRC aren't going to throw me in prison, but they haven't worked past the whole being afraid of anything to do with it part. I don't think most of us have.
Yeah.
And having that chocolate brownie in, or occasionally, like I've sent my homegrown apple leather out, and I've sent tomato seeds out as well for non-brownie lovers. But just having that little something to look forward to, actually physically in the post. Mm-hmm. It's everyone thinks they're looking forward to it. It's nice to have something for the post, but what really it's about is actually starting to change the patterns in the brain. Mm-hmm. And it's like having little rituals. So I've got we're both a member of Denise DeFil Thomas's boot camp.
We are.
So about to enter the slight woo-woo zone here. But I've got my little sort of area here with a Fortuna lady with an orange and a £50 note next to it.
Fab.
But it's about creating the nice, really nice rituals around it. So to be honest, the more scared you are, I would actually start with the self-care and start with the ritual. Mm-hmm. So if you like candles, this is the time to go and buy the nice candles. So have a specific candle that you really love, or specific music, or maybe specific yoga moves that help with breathing, and do those before you do anything to do with the money.
Yeah.
Or on payday.
Yeah.
Like, actually, that's the good thing. If someone's got a job, that would be where I would start, is to create a ritual on payday that is something different. So, ooh, I have money to spend.
Yeah.
So you, for example, set up the savings account, set up the ISAs, go and look at everything. So it's always easy to go and look at everything when you just had a whole lot of money just put in your account.
Yeah.
You know, go and do that, and just sort of, you just start somewhere and just break things down, just really, really basic. It's just what you do with it. You know, you don't go and do a massive crash diet. The hardest way of actually sorting out your health, I mean your physical health, mm-hmm. is to take one habit that you want to change and then to do that. And it's hardest because you've told your ego that you really mean it, and it's going to go, and it fights.
Yeah.
That's why people don't do it. That's why they do crash dieting. And it's the same thing. Take one habit and change it. So that's why I did the self-care for your finances retreat, because really that's what it's about.
We'll put a link into that, definitely. And that's a free retreat, isn't it?
Yeah, it's free, yeah.
Yeah, I'll put the link into that in the show notes for everybody, because I want to do that. It sounds like cool. Really, really cool. And for women who do have businesses, because I know that we have quite a few women who run their own business, who are perhaps limited companies or self-employed and so on. And I know I mentioned a little bit about the shiny object syndrome and things like that, because obviously it's slightly different with women who are earning their own income. Have you got any tips for them in terms of not feeling that, I mean, women who are freelancing things as well, not kind of getting that so scared about where the money's going to come from and all of that kind of, all of that fear that comes with running your own business and where's my next client and where's my next, you know, paycheck going to come from?
Exactly the same as for everybody else. It's a lot to do with beliefs, really. It really, yeah, really is. In fact, I've got the, I think it's in that the retreat packet, it's money mindset resources.
Yeah.
On a more practical level, it's, I'm actually phrasing it, it is actually preparing for growth, because there's going, oh my God, this is terrible. The next stage is, okay, I'm going to actually do something about this. Mm-hmm. And then the next stage after that is actually doing something about it. Mm-hmm. And this isn't a beat up thing, but quite often between wanting to and being able to do it, there's quite often a lot of mindset, you know, emotional growth going on.
Yeah.
It's not fun when you're in the middle of it. There's a lot of, usually a lot of beating up going involved. But when you're actually ready, it's things like structuring your personal finances. So looking at it, for example, is there consistent marketing? Mm-hmm. Is it just that for your kind of business, money comes in seasonally? It might just be that's the case. And it's just a thing. It's nothing personal. It might be the way it is. If that's just the way it is, or it's nothing to do with inconsistent marketing or whatever, then okay, money needs to be parceled up differently.
Yeah.
Maybe get a job some other time, and maybe go and do something else at the lower time of year. Maybe you need to move the money around slightly differently. Maybe basically take everything off your plate around the really, really busy season. Just things like structuring your money. So if you're a sole trader, so for example, you pay yourself every week, every fortnight, every month. Know what if actually that's going to work for you. You don't necessarily just need to come in and replace what a salary would do. Mm-hmm. And if you're already sort of on £30,000-£40,000 profit, sorry, that's profit for tax, including all your income from all sources and you're a sole trader, then, you know, you start looking at a limited company, even if you decide not to have one, just because that's often the next stage. It tells you a lot about where you want to go with your business.
Yeah, that's good to know, because I'm a limited company. And I always wondered, did I make the right choice becoming a limited company, or should I stay the self, should I be in a sole trader, blah, blah, blah.
Well, there's lots of different reasons for having one, but if somebody is, there's a point where there's a reason for reason to explore doing it for tax reasons.
Yeah.
And there's lots for those, but usually it's around £30,000-£40,000, including all income from everywhere. It's a good idea to go and look at it. It's more about a growth thing, really, about deciding whether or not, because businesses at different levels of growth and sizes, they feel different.
Yeah.
And whatever you decide to do, it helps you know what you want to do to a certain extent. It's almost a bit like sort of, you know, deciding whether or not to have a baby. Your life is going to be very different if you do and if you don't.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily about one is bad and one is good. Mm-hmm. It's just different. And having that sort of conversation is a really, really good thing to have. So, so again, if someone's a sole trader, just go and looking at it, you know, are you happy with how the money's coming in? How do you take the money? Do you even pay yourself a set amount of money every month? And it's just, it's basics like that. And quite often the first time anyone has ever really looked at what works is usually when they have a business. It's a lot easier if you're paid a salary. I mean, a salary in a job sense, just to just take what you're given. But actually there's no reason why if you have a job or a job and a business, to actually not do this as well, because it's the same kind of principles, really. It's just looking at it and going, well, okay, does this suit me?
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And again, I think it tends to, and I'm sure this happens for people who have got jobs as well, but there's a lot of like self-worth, isn't there, attached to money. And again, we are both in Denise Duffield Thomas's Lucky Mint Money Bootcamp, so we get a lot of the mindset stuff. And I think that's one of the things that came up for me, was how much of my worth was attached to money or lack of it and so on. And I think it came back to what you said before, but about remembering it is kind of numbers.
Yeah.
It's not our self-worth, just like food isn't our self-worth.
But I read a lot of fairly historical books, and I mean, as in sort of, you know, like 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th century kind. And one thing that has come through to me really clearly is that It was women who held the keys to the household finances. It was women who had the responsibility for the household accounting. It was not men, it was women. And actually, a lot of history that we know actually comes from women holding the account book, because they wrote down every single thing that was spent, how much it was and what it was. And a lot of stuff we know in history comes from that. It wasn't men doing that.
Yeah.
That was serious. That was power, and that was responsibility. And often, to be honest, I mean, sometimes it's the only power that they had.
Yeah.
But they were very, very, very good at it. If you start digging, there were an awful lot of female businesswomen. It's just they don't tend to be recorded, but they're there. Once you start looking,
yeah,
they're there. In fact, Queen Victoria even gave, I can't remember what they're called, but those sort of royal warrants, that's it, given to shots. Queen Victoria even gave, in fact, Eden Ravenscroft's, one of theirs was actually given to a woman.
Oh, right.
They're the people who make the graduation gowns and the gowns for the Lords and the Commons and all the royal stuff.
Oh,
and
some, right,
by the way, if you are in the sort of more top end of the corporate bracket, they make extremely nice clothes as well. In fact, just go in there to window shop. It's they've got a really nice eye on Chancery Lane. But that was run by, in Victorian times, that was run by a woman.
Yeah, wow. That's quite...
Which I like. It's nice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and again, I think it's interesting, you know, male and female roles around money, and certainly in modern families and modern setups, and how that... how people tend to manage it. So for example, I've got my own account and my husband's got his own account. We've got a joint account that we pay joint things, and we both pay towards childcare and things like that. But it's quite an interesting conversation to have, I think, with women, is around what their roles are with finances and their families. Have you got any kind of thoughts on that topic?
My main thought would be to go and look at who pays for what and restructure it to make sure that you get the most tax deductible benefit.
Oh, right.
If you work from home, which most of us listening probably will. So, for example, ideally, you want to be responsible for paying all the ones that count towards working from home expenses, like the electricity, the gas, the water, if it's metered, all those sorts of things. It's a bit more tricky if it goes into a joint account.
Right.
But ideally, you want to be paying for that yourself, because sometimes I'm afraid the conversation has been, no, I'm sorry, you can't really claim very much at all because you're not the person actually paying for it.
Oh, that's interesting.
So particularly if you move house, that's definitely a conversation to be having.
Oh, right. Oh, that's very interesting. I'll be on board that one for myself. But yeah, but this has been really, really interesting. And just to kind of sum up, so again, just to go back to the topic of self-care and finances, and just to kind of sum up what we've talked about, what kind of top three things would you suggest to women who might be listening, who, whether they work in a traditional job or are self-employed or run a business, in terms of bringing some of that self-care into the finances and finances into the self-care, what would your top three tips be for them?
I think the top one would be to actually have a ritual.
Yeah.
Have something really, really, really nice and indulgent. So if you really love scented candles, go out and buy one a step higher than you would normally have, and keep it for only that. So things like paydays and whenever you're doing anything to do with money. So a bank statement arrives, light the candle, particularly if it's a brown envelope.
I have to admit, I dread the HMRC ones, because I'm always a bit like, I don't really know what this means.
Well, that's exactly what it's for, because actually the job there is not about the envelope. The job there is to actually, because smell, the reason I like with the candles is because smell, it goes, pretty much bypasses all the junk we don't want in our brains.
Yeah.
And if you have a smell you really, really love, in fact, maybe even a childhood one, actually, I don't know, cornflake tarts, get the cornflakes out. but it rewires all of that. So your brain will associate this wonderful feeling and smell with, it's just a brown envelope. I know this sounds a bit strange saying it's just a brown envelope, but it is just a brown envelope, and you don't actually know what's in it. So for example, if you, the first thing would be to get a brown, you know, so to just to feeling it neutral, it's rewired to neutral.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Never mind positive. We'll just stick a neutral.
Yeah.
To start a ritual. Ideally, if you want to go real out for it, this is the time to have a sort of little medication kind of nice corner. Mm-hmm. You know, second one would be particularly good if you do have a business, because this stuff is tax deductible. It means you can buy stationery.
And just before we started recording, we were talking about Kiki K and stuff, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
You showed me your beautiful planner from Australia, and you don't need to tell me that it's looks a lot like.
Oh, it's totally, yes, like I said, it's sort of like, if you have a business, then really lovely stationery is, oh, it's lovely. But it's like, you know, where are your statements, for example? This is definitely a time to go and buy the really, really nice ones. Because, you know, even Kiki K, when Kiki K isn't exactly, you know, it's not the equivalent of Primark.
Yeah.
It's, I think it's 10 or 17 pounds a lever arch folder, which is going to last you for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's about the feeling. Do you absolutely adore, and have completely sort of a slightly inappropriate in love relationship with the stationery that houses your financial stuff?
Yeah.
Keep it out of the way of toddlers as well, because you know how you're going to feel if they scroll on it.
Oh.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, do you really, really enjoy where it's being housed in? Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be that expensive. I mean, I've got most of my financial things in an IKEA bathroom stool. I did the measurements and it worked out they took A4 quite nicely. And it's got a lid on it and it's very sturdy.
Good idea.
But that would be in the main one, actually. And the slightly, possibly slightly more scary one, but the one that is going to probably make the biggest difference long term would be actually just to keep track of the numbers.
Yeah.
And if you don't already, there's a 1 minute meditation in the retreat pack.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. So the reason for that is to start with that. So the word spreadsheet, and just even the fact that it's there, if you're one of these people that already has a reaction, that's what the meditation is for. So actually calm the breathing down.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there's things in there to keep track of digital detox days, how many days off you have a year, as well as just knowing the numbers like profit and after tax and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal again isn't what the numbers are or increasing them or anything like that. It's just to take everything down to neutral.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty difficult to grow things. If you think about it, what you're trying to do, if you feel they're really bad about it, it's just really hard work.
Yeah.
And it's getting that to neutral is the first thing. So I said that's why it's in there.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So you can put the link up. It's all free.
I will do. Yeah, I'm gonna sign up for it straight away after this. That's really, really good. It sounds exactly what I need as well. But thank you so much, Rosie. That's been incredibly interesting. And where can people find you? Is it the moneyhaven.com?
It's themoneyhaven.com.
Fabulous. And you're on Instagram as well, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
Yes, and what's in your Instagram? I will put a link to it as well. But
it's the Money Haven.
The Money Haven now as well, fab. So thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And do go and check out the Finance Self-Care Retreat online, which is free. And we'll put the link to that in the show notes as well. But thank you very much, Rosie. Bye.
Bye-bye.